Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for the Doctors Roundtable, a forum for conversations with Atlanta's leading doctors and thought leaders about cutting-edge trends and topics in health, wellness, and lifestyle issues. Here's our host, Tanya Mack.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us this afternoon. We are going to have a very interesting topic today, talking about something somewhat controversial, but getting more and more mainstream every day, and that is energy healing and energy medicine being used as a complement to traditional medicine. And doing the research, I found all kinds of things. We've heard the words chi, prana, bioenergy fields. There's a lot of research that has been done in medicine and just in life talking about the effect of energy in our thoughts on our health and well-being. And I have a fascinating expert that I've known a long time, thrilled to have her today. Today I have Robbie Hochek. Welcome, Robbie.
Thank you.
And let me tell you a little bit about her. So Robbie is a gifted healing facilitator. She is an energy therapist based in Atlanta for over 15 years. She does private sessions and workshops all over the Southeast in Atlanta. She is also a nationally certified clinical hypnotherapist. And she is an author that is featured in three books, Remarkable Women, Getting Things Done, and Freeing Godiva. So you can actually read a lot about her and her life and her work. So welcome, Robbie, to the show today.
Thank you.
Very good. Well, I'll tell you, so excited to have you on because I think we're going to hopefully enlighten a lot of people today and bring a lot of things to the forefront. And I know half of our listeners are providers and practitioners themselves, and half are patients and consumers that listen to the show or people interested in health and wellness and lifestyle issues that kind of keep us at our optimal level. So I know that's pretty much what you've been doing your entire career.
That's true.
So welcome here.
Thank you.
I kind of want to just start talking about the body's energy system and how it works and what's normal and just kind of laying the foundation for us on how our bodies, everything from the electromagnetic of the heart to meridians, just kind of as an energy therapist, give us the lowdown of what's basically normal and what you're looking for and how the body is connected to energy.
Okay. Well, energy healing is actually manipulation of the human energy field or the biofields to elicit a state of health and well-being. So that's what energy healing is. And the energy healing, or an energy biofield, consists of three different components, the largest being the aura. That's an electromagnetic field around the body. And then the next one is a chakra system, and that comes to us from the Hindu tradition. And chakra is a Sanskrit word meaning wheel. And there are seven energy centers throughout the body, starting in the pelvic region, going all the way through the top of the head. And those are just power centers. And it's electromagnetic energy. So what that means is that it can be imprinted. It's like an empty disc. So energy can be imprinted in the chakra and in the auras, emotional energy. And the last is the meridian system. And the meridian system comes from the Oriental medicine, from Oriental medicine tradition. And a meridian is a channel or a pathway that runs along the body with small points along the pathway that you can manipulate for health and well-being. So those are the key components to a personal energy system, the meridian, the chakras, and the aura.
Okay, so the meridian or the energy pathways, are they like through our limbs? Are they based like around, I know like, are they based like we think of in healthcare, like the organ system in the center of the body? Or how do they run, these meridians?
They're all throughout the body. They're bilateral, meaning that there's one on one side of the body and there's one on the other side of the body. Most of the meridians are associated with an organ. For instance, there's the lung meridian that runs through the arms. There's a heart meridian, pericardium. There's the kidney. So most of the meridians are associated with an organ, and they run all over the body.
Okay. So another thing I wanted to just kind of make a connection with, and again, this mind-body-energy connection we'll be talking a lot about today, is just the similarities to traditional medicine. Like I think of like neurotransmitters and neurons and pathways. We really are just a big transmitting station.
Exactly.
From our brain doing the direction of neurotransmitters transmitters to our heart being an electromagnetic pulse that keeps our sinus rhythm breathing. So
that's exactly
right. We are all kind of automated energy pulsators every time that we do anything, really.
That's right.
Okay. All right. So tell me, how do you measure kind of normal energy? How do you, as an energy therapist, how do you begin at normal?
when I look at a client, I'm looking at their energy patterns. A healthy, happy person has a very cohesive, balanced, structured energy system. And energy flows through all of the organs and feeds the system. So a happy, healthy, normal person would have a strong meridian system, a strong chakra system, and a strong cohesive aura.
Okay, so when you actually see a patient in practice, you're taking a look at energy fields and kind of looking maybe where they're out of balance.
Correct.
Or if they're in good balance to begin with.
Correct.
Okay, very good. So let's talk further a little bit about any time that we are ill or injured or stressed. We know on the medical side of the equation that that affects everything from our immune system to our body functions, but I'm sure that it affects the energy that we have as
well. Oh, absolutely. Right.
So tell us a little bit about, just kind of what happens to the energy system when we have surgery, when we're feeling depressed, when we have a life incident, or when we have a disease of some kind. What do you see?
Well, this bioenergy, like I said before, bioenergy is like an empty disc. So all of the events of our lives, whether they're negatively charged or positively charged, are encoded either in the chakras and or the aura. So, and those events are organized by the level of frequency that the emotion records. So for instance, the darker emotions, the heavy emotions like fear, anger,
sadness.
Grief, sadness, right? Those are all heavy emotions, and those record in one way. The happy emotions record in another way. The negative emotions will create what's called a chaotic pattern in the energy system. And the more a client thinks about that trauma, feeds that trauma, thinks about that trauma, sends thought and energy to that trauma, the denser it gets. And so when you start with a chaotic pattern, it will eventually become a trauma signature. And that trauma signature becomes denser and more heavy and more difficult to deal with. So eventually, it creates an imbalance and an obstruction in the flow of energy, which causes, left untreated, can cause serious illness.
Mm-hmm. Very good. So now I'm very curious about how you got started in this business to begin with. It's not, you don't wake up and think you're in college and say, I'm going to be
No.
an energy healer. So how does that even happen?
Well, I have an IT degree, and I spent many years in IT in the corporate world. And several years ago, my mother was diagnosed with cancer, and what I realized, ovarian cancer, and what I realized was I have half of those DNA cells. And so that if her DNA cells turned into cancer, there was a likelihood that I could go the same path. So I started looking for a body of work that would help me look at not just the medical, but the emotional issues that create disease. And so I found Rosen Method. And that's a body of alternative work that deals specifically with emotional trauma.
Very good. And I want to just interject some of the research that I found when I was studying this topic in the past couple of weeks. A couple of things really jumped out at me. One is that the CDC's National Health Statistics Report documented that 1 in 4 Americans use complementary medicine. Now, I found in talking to other physicians and other providers on this show and patients that a lot of times they don't tell the providers they're doing it, but they all are. So I find that very interesting. They all believe. So there's something in the belief and the pattern and what people are actually doing to promote their self-healing and to look at things just besides traditional medicine. Another thing that I thought was really interesting that I saw from a group of independent physicians that were polled was that as a group, they thought that rather than surgery or medicine or treatments, that 1/3 of healings come from our ability to heal ourselves. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, so it's just us all learning how to manage and tap into some of the abilities that we already have with the help of practitioners
right,
like yourself.
Our natural healing ability, right?
Yeah, very good. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about how energy healing is used in conjunction with traditional medicine to optimize healing then.
Well, I've had traditional medicine typically doesn't address the emotional or the energetic patterns. What they'll do is address the physical body. Mm-hmm. And so I think that traditional therapy is an excellent way to treat a disease, but then I think it has a piece missing. So that's where energy therapy comes in and can be very valuable.
Very good. And what would a patient that comes to you or a client that comes to you, how do you begin? How does somebody begin to tap into the self-healing ability and to begin to consider energy management as part of their overall health?
It depends on the client and their ability to face their issues. So when I start with a client, so for instance, I had a client who came to me with ovarian cysts. Mm-hmm. And so her doctor told her that she had ovarian cysts and needed surgery. But she came to me, she was very pleased that he was able to diagnose the ovarian cysts, but he couldn't give her information on what she did or how her thought process worked such that it resulted in ovarian cysts. Mm-hmm. So when we started working, I asked her, what are the traumatic experiences in your life that most upset you? And as we started talking, she began telling me about the fact that she was the youngest of several children. All of her siblings were very successful. They were either lawyers or judges, and she was the only child out of all of them that didn't go to law school or get a law degree. So when she compared herself to her siblings, she felt like a total failure. Mm-hmm. So when you look at that, now take that situation and look at it energetically. When you look at the way that the body processes, regret and worry are processed by the spleen. So that spleen meridian was holding all of her regret and worry. Now, the spleen manages the sexual organs. In addition to that, so that's the meridian system. So in addition to that, her first chakra is right there in the sexual organs. So the first chakra deals with family of origin issues. So she had all of those issues that she was feeding with regret and worry and I'm a failure and all those negative thoughts right there in that pelvic girdle. And so we started looking at how she can begin to redefine herself, not in terms of comparing herself to her family, but in terms of her own success. So I cleared her meridians, I cleared her chakras, I balanced her aura and her energy system. But in addition to that, we started looking at reconfiguring her thinking and how she could redefine herself in a healthy way. And so over time, she had the cysts removed. But in addition to that, she changed how she thought. She mm-hmm. changed how she felt about herself. She changed how she thought. And that was 4 years ago. And as far as I know today,
No regrowth.
She's happy and she's healthy.
That was some underlying thing. So it's very interesting, the location in the body of how everything kind of everything pointed in the same direction. So you brought up a really good point I want to explore a little further, and that's how our thoughts we now can measure actually a thought, I think.
Yes.
And before the show, we were talking a little bit about the work of Dr. Masaru Emoto, mm-hmm. Doing work about sending thoughts to water in positive ways and negative ways. And also I was telling you that Deepak Chopra just mentioned this in his workshop that he's done globally in the last 3 weeks, over the last 3 weeks.
Right.
And basically what he was talking about is the studies that were completed where a group of people focused positive energy on water molecules and then a different group of people focused hostile negative energy on water molecules. And when they examined them under the microscope, where the particles attached was orderly in the positive ones and very consistent and very chaotic in their attachments on the other side. And then he went on to extrapolate. So since our brain is sending impulses and we are mostly water,
right,
our thoughts originate in our brain. And so literally you are, well, your thinking is affecting your entire body all of the time.
Absolutely.
Do you agree with that?
Absolutely.
Are you familiar with the work?
Yes. Every time we think a thought, it produces chemicals in our body, and every cell in our body is listening to how we think. So if we're self-critical, self-judgmental, that's going to create a negative, what I was talking about, a negative or a chaotic pattern. And then the more you feed that pattern, that chaos pattern, the denser it becomes, and then it becomes a trauma signature. And then it begins, eventually, it will begin to affect the physicality of the body.
Right. So I want to follow it a little further. And I know we've talked about you starting with digging a little deeper to what's kind of causing when a patient or a client comes to you, the underlying root cause.
Right.
But I also know that once you uncover it, there's a number of tools that you could use. So I'd like for you to kind of just talk about different kinds of energy healing techniques. And I also would like for you to talk a little bit about, I know many people have remote healing experiences. The energy therapist does not need to be right there with the person. So can you just kind of go through a couple of different kinds of modalities that you use and how they work?
Well, the ones I'm familiar with or trained in are Rosen method, and that has to do with emotional trauma that's lodged in the body. Another one is magnet therapy, and that uses the meridians and magnets to release encoded energy in the body or in the aura and the psychic field. Another one is polarity therapy, craniosacral therapy, hypnosis, ontological kinesiology, aura balancing, chakra balancing, acupressure, and breath work. There's so many out there and available. Mm.
So how do you decide which tool?
For me personally, when a client comes in my office, I think one of the most important aspects of a skilled practitioner is to be able to assess the client and determine where the client is in their life and where they are energetically. Because when a healing takes place, there's several components at play. So it's like a symphony. So you have the component of the disease. You've got the energy field of the disease or the issue. If it's not a disease yet, then it's an issue. Mm-hmm. You have the energy field of the client, the energy field of the practitioner, and then what happens when all three of those fields are joined, funneling through the template of the modality. So not every modality works for every person, mm-hmm. and not every practitioner works for every person. Mm-hmm. So all of those things, the stars have to align for a healing to take place. Mm-hmm. So a very skilled practitioner will be able to scan the client and determine if they are able to adjust their energy level to the needs of the client.
Okay, so that brings up a good point. If we're interested in seeing an energy therapist, and they're not all one size fits all.
Correct.
How would we on the consumer side be able to actually make a decision, or would that be up to the therapist?
No, I think it's up to the client.
Okay.
Because I think that we all have an innate intuition, and that your body will tell you who's right for you. There's so many different types of therapy and so many different types of therapists. So, and regulation isn't, or the certification process isn't regulated. So what that means is there can be one therapist. So for example, when I went through hypnotherapy training, it was an intense six month protocol where at the end of every module, we were tested, not only skill tested, but tested for the material. So at the end of every module, we were tested. And then before I was actually certified, I had to pass a board test. And then I also had to pass a skill assessments test. And then every 2 years, I have to submit continuing education hours. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty well regulated. And then on the other hand...
Is that a national certification?
Yes. Okay. Yes, that is a national. I'm a nationally certified clinical hypnotherapist. Okay. And then on the other end of the spectrum, I went to a one-weekend class, and at the end of it, I was certified level 1 theta healing. Mm-hmm. And there's no requirements mm-hmm. for continuing education. There's no requirements for keeping up. So it's a broad spectrum. Mm-hmm. So if a client is looking for a therapist and training is important to them, I think it's important to ask for the skill level, ask mm-hmm. for what kinds of training they've been through, what kind of certifications. In addition, I'd also, if I were looking for a practitioner, I would also look for ask for referrals, client referrals. Mm-hmm. What kinds of results have you gotten with your clients?
Are there certain kinds of conditions that lend themselves more to one kind of therapy versus another? Like if you had, problems with your feet, you know, that you would be more likely to have, like, magnetic therapy might work better or might work worse. Is there any that kind of go like and like?
You know, that's a great question, but the answer is it all depends on the person. When I was doing trauma therapy, one of the things that they taught us is to enter the client's field with as little disruption as possible. Mm-hmm. So when I was first training, one of the things I thought was, well, hands and feet. Who holds trauma in their hands and feet? Mm-hmm. So I went to go touch a man's feet, and he went nuts. Mm-hmm. He had a trauma concerning his feet, and I touched in the exact place.
It's like hitting a nerve. You just hit the energy nerve on him.
Oh, I poked him. I poked that energy mm-hmm. nerve, yeah. So you can't tell where people will record their trauma.
Okay, very good. Well, I'd like to talk a little bit about, for people that have never visited an energy therapist before or had an experience like this, I'd like to talk about exactly what they can expect in terms of the session itself. Like how much are they touched? Who is where? What about remote? How does all that work? How long does the session last? How many sessions are normal for what kind of thing? So let's talk about expectations.
Okay. The type of session, what the client does in a session is dependent on the modality. So for instance, if there's an aura healing or an aura balancing or a chakra balancing, typically the client lies on the table and they're fully clothed. Mm-hmm. With the Rosen method, they're under the sheet and they have removed some of the clothing. Mm-hmm. They keep their underwear and socks on. So if you're doing hypnosis, you're reclining in a chair. If you're doing breath work, you're laying on an incline on the floor. So it all depends where you are in the therapist's room, depends on what modality you're using. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you sit in a chair. Sometimes you can do aura balancing with the client sitting in a chair. So sometimes you're clothed, like a massage, you're mm-hmm. completely naked. Mm-hmm. So it just depends on the modality. Mm-hmm. And in length of time, it also depends on the practitioner. So there's some practitioners who set a bell and say, ding, an hour's up. Would you like another hour or would you mm-hmm. like to stop now? I don't believe if a client is processing, I don't believe that's the right thing to do to interrupt. So for me, I will continue and let a client go as long as they need to. Mm-hmm. It depends on the practitioner. Mm-hmm. And also, I think it depends on what's going on with the client. If the client is in a place, if you and the client have agreed that it will be an hour and the client is at a good place, a good stopping point at the end of the hour, then I think mm-hmm. it's okay to stop. But mm-hmm. again, it depends on the modality, what happens in the mm-hmm. session and the client.
What would be like an average, about an hour?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, would be about an average.
Most people do an hour.
Okay, and then you mentioned the lady with ovarian cysts. So if they're coming for a specific treatment of something, one session, I'm guessing, would not yield the optimal results. But what would – I know it's, again, dependent upon each person, but – would it be a year's worth of sessions or three or five sessions or one only, or what's kind of a general?
It depends on the issue and it depends on the client's willingness to face the issue. So there are times when even the most skilled practitioner can't move a client. Sometimes a client will identify, right? Well, and they identify with their wounding.
Right.
I'm a survivor of this. And so they have drawn a box around themselves and said, this is who I am. And so for them to release that will take a lot of work on their part and demand that they recreate a definition of themselves outside the wounding. And some clients just aren't willing to mm-hmm. go there. So in that case, there's nothing even the most skilled practitioner can do for them.
Mm-hmm. Very good. And what can people expect as far as results? So, again, I know it depends on the thing that you're seeing them for and how extensive that is that you just mentioned, but I don't think people have a realistic expectation. Like, what would most people describe their experience like when they walk out from a session with you?
Sometimes I work predominantly with women, and sometimes mm-hmm. women walk out and they say, oh, my God, that was life-changing. I got to an issue I realized. I had an aha moment and realized mm-hmm. that I have an issue with my father or whatever it is. They're very cognizant of the process that they've just gone through. And those are usually clients who have worked with me for some time or clients who have done meditation, hypnotherapy, some other form of practice that when they come into my office, they're not starting from ground zero. They have other modalities in their life to support their spiritual awareness.
Mm-hmm. I've heard a lot of other clients describe their experience even in the first session as they just feel lighter. I
yes.
don't know if that's emotionally lighter or more energy, but it seems to be a common feeling or description.
Correct.
That some patients use after they see having energy.
Some of my clients there. Say, I have no idea what you did. I just feel better.
Right. That sounds like me. I'm one of your clients. That sounds like exactly what I would say. I want to talk a little bit too, just about the con before we get into some of the case studies we're going to talk specifically about medical case studies, but it is controversial, this energy therapy thing. You mentioned regulation before, and it's not a highly regulated thing.
Correct.
I know some aspects of it are, we've talked before about hypnosis has become more and more regulated as time has gone on, but other ones really aren't at all. It looks like in doing the research, a lot of studies point to the efficacy of this, and a lot of them not so much.
Correct.
So can you speak to that a little bit?
Absolutely. Well, a client does not passively receive a healing session. As I said before, there are many moving pieces. It's like a symphony. So we have the energy field of the client, the energy field of the disease, the energy field of the practitioner, and then all funneled through the template of the modality. So all of those have to be in alignment for a modality to work and for a client to receive a healing. So if one of those pieces is off, you're not going to receive the healing that you were looking for. Or if the client is resistant to actually letting go of the disease. Sometimes I've had clients come into my office. For instance, I had a smoker come in for hypnosis. And she said, my husband's making me come. So there was, okay, I'm doing this, but I'm not going to heal. I'm not going to let that smoking go. I don't want to. Mm-hmm. So I could have stood on my head. No matter what I did, she was not going to let the smoking go. Mm-hmm. So
again, our thoughts affect.
Again, yes.
our thoughts
and our attitudes, yes, affect our ability to heal.
Right.
So nothing I could have done would have fixed that.
Very good. Well, I want to talk about a couple of actual case studies where you worked with patients on the clinical side, one a little more catastrophic and one a little more everyday for all of us. But I know that you do energy therapy a lot with some cancer patients.
Correct.
So why don't you just kind of give us a sample of how that works or how you what your experience with that's been?
I think one of the biggest wins for a client in going through chemo treatment or cancer therapy is being able to receive the medical treatment, but at the same time looking at the underlying causes of why perhaps this happened in their body and where it happened. Some women have ovarian cancer, some women have breast cancer, sometimes it's something else. But it all, how the disease manifests is always predicated by their thought process and by feelings, beliefs, and emotions. And so in working with one of the clients who was going through chemo treatment, she said the most personal growth I ever got was during my chemo treatment because she was seeing me on a regular basis and we were looking at the thoughts, beliefs, and attitudes that were underlying her self-esteem and her attitudes so that it perhaps resulted in the cancer.
Yeah, I think that's a good point where on the more traditional side we've become through TV, media, expectations and our instant gratification more expecting that we're going to go to the doctor and get a pill to fix something or get a treatment to fix something, and we're more symptom management instead of root cause.
Correct.
Management. So really you're coming back to the thought that dis-ease starts with us, and there's a component that is the thought process and how we our thoughts and mind-body connection.
And managing, being responsible for what we think and how we feel. That's mm-hmm. critical.
Well, I like that, being responsible. A lot of people, yeah, we think that's it's always outside of us.
Right.
When we carry around a lot of what we need already.
And so I tell the clients who come to me, I can't fix you. Mm-hmm. I can't. All I can do, I'm like a coach, and I stand on the sidelines. I can't get in the game. That's your game.
Mm-hmm. That's a good analogy.
Well, because someone said, I've been on your table. I had a client actually say to me, I've been on your table for 3 sessions now, and I still haven't lost weight, and I don't have a boyfriend.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. I can't fix that.
Uh-huh. Yeah, very good. All right, well, I want to talk about another one that we all deal with every day in our life, no matter who you are, what walk of life you come from, and that is stress and how energy relates to stress and the idea of some energy balancing or stress management. So can you talk to us about how you work with people on the stress management side?
I think one of the most important elements of stress is being aware when you've triggered the stress response. And when you've triggered the stress response, back off of that by using your breathing. There's some very simple techniques that you can use. But if you get into running a pattern of stress and begin living with a chronic pattern of stress, oftentimes it becomes unconscious. You're unconscious to the level of stress that you're dealing with. And that takes its toll on the body. When you're stressed, when you eat too much processed food, you don't get enough sleep, you're drinking too much toxins like alcohol and coffee, that takes its toll on the body. It will create blocks and chaos patterns in the body. But when you begin to take care of your body and pay attention to what you think and how you feel, then you can begin to repattern that stress. And it's not an unconscious thing.
So a lot of it is just being aware and stopping in the moment. And
absolutely.
Because a lot of times, you know, you just think of our breathing and our heartbeats are automated.
Right.
And we rush through life and we don't pause to really pay attention. Like my head, I have a headache. I'm holding stress in my head or my back
me take
or whatever.
Advil.
Yes, yes. So we turn to something else instead of just stop and take a minute and listen.
Right.
And feel.
That's critical, feeling.
Okay, very good. So you said that you would come today with some tips. One of the things that I think is great is that some of the listeners can actually walk away with some kind of tool or some kind of exercise that they could do, that they could kind of get a little experience for themselves in this area. So how can you help us with that?
Yes, I wanted to give some tips on stress. There's such simple tools, but we have to think to use them. As an example, I was coming back from New Orleans. I was on a plane from New Orleans to Atlanta, and a young man was walking down the aisle, clearly distressed. He was crying. He was hyperventilating. He said, I have to get off. And he sat down in his seat, which was directly across the aisle from me, and I was watching him. And as I was watching him, I realized that the stress attack was running him. He was very panicked. Then he got up and ran off the plane, came back a few minutes later, escorted by a stewardess, a flight attendant. And as I was watching him, I was using my psychic vision to look at him and realize that there was a very high probability that during flight, he would run for the door. And I thought, oh, no, 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 that's not going to happen. So the next time the flight attendant walked by, I identified myself as a trauma therapist, and I said, I think I can help. She was only too relieved to
of
have
course.
Me sit next
yeah.
to him. So as I sat next to him, I sat down, and I said, I took his hand, and I put my thumb in the middle of his palm and gently took the two fingers of the opposite end and held his palm and said, just breathe with me. I'll sit here with you, and we'll be fine. We'll do this together. So just deep breaths, long, slow, deep breaths, in through the nose and out through the mouth, and he started to calm down. So that is a balancing point. At the middle of your palm, the thumb in the middle of the palm, is an emotional balancing point. And he was in a really panicked state.
And I'm trying that on myself, listeners, to see if it makes me feel better. And actually, it does, actually.
And if you hold that for 2 minutes and breathe slowly and still need more support, do the other hand. Take the thumb in the middle of the palm and gently hold it between thumb and fingers.
The experience I'm having is I would never have thought of my hand for anything in the moment, but the minute that I put the pressure in this place that you're directing me, it feels like it's been tight
mm-hmm.
and it's releasing.
That's the pericardium. You're holding the pericardium meridian right there.
Okay. So, yeah, try that, listeners. You might de-stress your own. Kevin, we're all in the studio trying it now. Everyone that's in here with us is trying.
So another place is right between the little finger and the ring finger. If you can get your index finger in between those two bones, yeah, somewhere in between those two bones, and just begin to gently rub and hold that and breathe deeply. Breathe in and out. That's a triple warmer or triple burner meridian, and that's tied to the fight or flight response. So when this young man was having his attack, I asked him after I'd held his palms for a while, I asked him if he would let me touch his ears, around his ears. And so I tapped around the ear on the skull, and that released the fight or flight response. So that's another one. So just breathing and tapping either around the ear or holding that point, that's triple warmer three.
Yeah, that feels good. We're all trying uh-huh. this too. So those yeah. of you that aren't here, we're all of us in here trying it.
And the other one I used on him is in the sternum, right at the level of the heart between the breasts. This is conception vessel 17. It's called the Sea of Tranquility. Isn't that nice?
Mm-hmm.
So hold that and just massage gently and breathe deeply. This actually will stop a panic attack. So I used this on him. And then there's some three, if you take three fingers below the navel, so take three fingers and then just below the last finger, hold that. That's also a balancing point. That's a sedation point. And
you know, I'm wondering if this chest, the Sea of Tranquility or whatever you mm-hmm. said, I'm thinking, like, I wonder if that would help people with, like, heartburn, or it feels like it calms that whole.
Mm-hmm. That whole, it opens the
it
chest.
It radiates out several inches, so
right.
I'm wondering if that
It would opens the chest, it calms the breathing, and it will actually stop a panic attack. So the most important thing you can do when you're stressed is to stop and breathe and feel. Feel your stress. Feel what you're feeling. And if you need more support, those are some pressure points
you can use yourself to apply.
And
pressure.
I have used those pressure points with that poor man on the plane, and actually stopped it. But after about 20 minutes of talking to him and working with him with the breathing and the points, he was calm. He was weepy, but he was calm. And he had
he wasn't
one
ready to run for the door though.
No. And he had one more flight. So he and I have emailed back and forth since, and he said that he did very well on his next flight just with the points that I taught him and the breathing.
Oh, very good. So he was able to self-regulate then
yes.
after that, which is even more important because then we again take responsibility for
yes.
our own
so
awareness.
I was thrilled that he remembered the points that I had taught him.
Okay, very good. And are there any other tips that you want to leave the listeners with today?
The most important point is pay attention to what you're feeling. Pay attention to what you're feeling and breathe.
Okay.
And when you do that, you're not going to create as dense a chaos pattern.
Very, very good. Well, I think it's really great today that you came to visit us and we could pull this energy medicine and energy healing conversation more into the mainstream of medicine. I think I agree with you that the part that's missing is the emotional part or the underlying root cause of things, how our thoughts affect our bodies and how they are inextricably intertwined. And I also want to give Robbie an endorsement. I've been her patient for a while, maybe 2 or 3 years. Yeah. I've come to Robbie prior to surgery twice,
right.
And post-surgery, I had some abdominal laparoscopy surgery. I think I recovered in record time. In fact, one of my procedures, I was supposed to be home for 2 weeks. I was home for 5 days, and a friend of mine recently had that surgery and was off for almost 4 weeks.
Wow.
So I'm a personal walking attestment to
Thank you.
Power of our thoughts and an energy healer. So open your minds out there, listeners, and look for alternatives and complementary therapies to whatever else you're doing with the medical aspects of your life. So we appreciate that. So Robbie, I want to end the show with you having a chance to tell us about your practice and how listeners can find you.
I have a website that's still in construction. So if you're going out there and it's incomplete, my apologies. This was a last minute substitution, so I wasn't prepared for people visiting my website just yet, but it's transcendentjourneys.com, or you can reach me by phone, 678-579-9250. Okay. And so if someone comes to me and wants to work on a problem, be willing to work.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you so much for coming today and for shedding some light on this most fascinating and controversial topic. For all of you out there, thanks for listening today. We'll catch you the next time. And please visit our sponsor, www.healthgate.com, to see what's there for you in the healthcare arena. Thanks so much.
The Doctor's Roundtable has been a production brought to you by HealthGate and Business Radio X. HealthGate is a groundbreaking website where board-certified doctors and specialists offer savings on out-of-pocket healthcare costs. For more information about HealthGate, please visit www.healthgate.com or call 404-692-5377. We hope you tune in next week, and thank you for listening.